Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, researchers are trying to understand why COVID-19 has taken a vastly disproportionate toll on Filipino-American nurses. Data compiled by National Nurses United find that while Filipino-Americans make up 4% of the nation's nursing workforce, they account for 30% of its coronavirus-related deaths. We learn more about what could be driving the numbers. Then, a new animated short film on Netflix offers a touching reflection on grief and loss. We'll talk to the Bay Area native who made Canvas. Join us. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. In California, as in many states, Filipino-American nurses can be found in ICUs, emergency rooms, and at the bedsides of patients. And recent data suggests they are bearing the brunt of coronavirus-related deaths among nurses. Filipino-Americans make up 20% of California's nursing workforce and about 4% of the nation's overall. But recent data from National Nurses United find they account for 30% of COVID-19 deaths among U.S. nurses. Joining me now is Catherine Siniza Choi, professor in the Department of Ethnic Studies at UC Berkeley. Her books include Empire of Care, Nursing and Migration in Filipino-American History. Thanks so much for joining us, Drs. Choi.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with us is Zenny Cortez, a registered nurse at Kaiser Permanente South San Francisco Medical Center and co-president of National Nurses United. Glad to have you here, Zenny Cortez.
Thank you for having me.
You know, even before the data were compiled by National Nurses United, did you suspect that the virus was taking this outsized toll on Filipino Americans?
Yes and no. So, yes, because of the nature of where we worked, like you said, in critical care areas where highly infected COVID-19 patients are cared for, and the length of time that we spend with the patients on our shifts, and also the amount of number of days that we work in the hospitals, I know that we will be very susceptible to this virus because of our prolonged exposure.
Yes, but you say yes and no. I mean, what was your reaction when you saw just how staggering that disproportionate nature of those numbers were in terms of the effect?
I say no in a way because I refused to believe in the beginning. I attested to the fact that, oh, maybe they have pre-existing conditions, you know, maybe they had underlying conditions or something like that. I refused to believe that it was because of our extended exposure in the hospitals in our work areas and also the lack of optimum PPE that was not provided to us at the very beginning of the pandemic.
But then as you saw this play out, you realized that those structural factors could be at play then? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, because I've lost two acquaintances to this virus, one from New York and one from Chicago. And I know them and they do not have pre-existing conditions. They're healthy people, healthy nurses who are into exercise, you know, healthy eating habits and all that. And so then as time went on and I see the numbers of Filipino nurses being victims to this virus, I just did not think anymore about pre-existing conditions, but it is because of lack of PPE and our prolonged exposure to the virus in the work environment.
So, Catherine Siniza Choi, why are Filipino-American nurses more likely to work in these critical care settings, as Zenny Cortez is saying, the ICU, emergency rooms, at bedside settings as well.
Well, I'm coming from this topic from the perspective as an ethnic studies scholar and an Asian American historian. And so one of the reasons why we're seeing this concentration of Filipino nurses here in U.S. hospitals and other healthcare institutions has to do with an over century long unequal history that begins in the early 20th century with U.S. colonization of the Philippines and their creation of an Americanized training hospital system there that would train Filipino nurses in ways that would eventually prepare them to work in the United States. And after World War II, when we started to observe critical nursing shortages in various parts of the United States, but especially in inner city public hospitals, American hospital recruiters turned to the Philippines because of this colonial history and because of their Americanized preparation, especially in nursing. And as a result, after 1960, you have over 150,000 Filipino nurses who have migrated to the U.S. So this is a mass migration that is six decades long. And they follow historically a pattern. Filipino nurse immigrants historically follow a pattern of other immigrant laborers who find themselves in dangerous and risky work. And that includes working at the bedside, ICUs, emergency rooms, and that includes a history of Filipino immigrant nurses in the United States having served not solely on COVID-19, but also in previous epidemics in the United States.
Well, so Terry tweets, could the disparities with severe reactions to COVID-19 be because of higher viral exposure in their jobs as well as racism? Terry also goes on to write, could it also be because of G6PDD being more prevalent and ignored in Filipino communities? There's a lot to unpack there, but I do want to ask you about this question of discrimination and what role you feel like that plays in terms of a concentration of Filipino American workers in what sounds to be some of the most demanding and potentially dangerous work, especially with COVID-19.
That's an excellent. Yeah. Thank you. I think that's an excellent question that we ought to be asking ourselves is whether or not this disproportionate and devastating toll on Filipino nurses is a result, we should ask, is it a result of something structural, something historical? And we have seen historically that even though there have been success stories of Filipino nurses in the United States gaining socioeconomic mobility, we also have to look at those cases of discrimination, which include things like fraudulent recruitment practices, which include things like the assignment historically of Filipino nurses on the least desirable shifts and the more dangerous and risky kind of work. We have to ask ourselves, are Filipino nurses, Filipino American nurses here in the United States, are they being given the same kinds of opportunities for exploring other areas of nursing? Are they being promoted to other kinds of professional opportunities where they could have more of a voice in terms of these kinds of disparities?
Zeni Cortez, what do you think about what's behind having more Filipino Americans in, especially during COVID-19, the more riskier roles?
I agree with the points that Professor Choi has made. And also to add to that is the fact that a lot of our Filipino nurses, you know, in terms of being recruited from the Philippines by whether they're legal or illegal recruiters, when they come and start working for the hospitals that they gain employment, they do not speak up because they feel that they are very indebted to their sponsoring employers that even if they are put in precarious or unsafe working conditions, they don't question anything. Because the other thing that we have in our culture is we do not question authority. So I think that those two reasons add up to what's going on and why there's disparity in perhaps in the assignments and in the way that we are being treated. Because no matter where you put us, we will not complain. We will just do our best, and you know, we will work. We will take it. We find it as a challenge, and again, we do our best. We take care of our patients the best we can in any way possible. So I see it that way, and so it's very sad because I feel that nurses, Filipino nurses, should start speaking up and advocating for themselves. And in some ways, I am very hopeful because older Filipino nurses are starting to speak up.
Mm.
And the younger ones are more up to speak up and advocate for themselves. And of course, you know, both generations would advocate for their patients.
I saw a statistics, Annie Cortez, in a ProPublica piece that also found that Filipino Americans were, you know, very likely also to send remittances to the Philippines. For example, in 2019, I think there was a stat of like 35 billion back to the Philippines. And I'm curious if you feel like that plays a role in terms of pressure to do work that might not always be in the safest environments. Yeah.
Yes, I think that also plays a role because a lot of, you know, the Philippines is a third world country where, you know, there a lot of people are poor, and the ticket to getting out of poverty is for the children of families to enter into a profession that's highly desirable and importable, and so that is nursing. So when they come to work here in the U.S., not only here in the U.S., but anywhere outside of the Philippines, they do have a lot of recruitment fees to pay back. And then also once they've established themselves in wherever they are, and especially here in the U.S., they would take the overtime, first of all, because they know that if they don't accept the overtime, there will be no staff to take care of the patients. And then on the other hand, it's beneficial for them because that's extra income, extra money that they would send back to the Philippines.
We're talking with Zenny Cortez, a registered nurse at Kaiser Permanente South San Francisco Medical Center and co-president of National Nurses United. Also with us, Catherine Sinisa Choi, professor in the Department of Ethnic Studies at UC Berkeley. And her books include Empire of Care, Nursing and Migration in Filipino-American History. Wondering, listeners, what questions or thoughts you have about the disparity that we're hearing about, this staggering death toll among Filipino-American nurses, and do the accounts ring true for you or reflect your experiences? Give us a call, 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Email us, forum@kqed.org, or get in touch on Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Stay with us.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking about the disproportionate toll the pandemic is taking on Filipino-American nurses. Joining us is Zenny Cortez, a registered nurse at Kaiser Permanente South San Francisco and co-president of National Nurses United, and Dr. Catherine Sunisa Choi, a professor in the Department of Ethnic Studies at UC Berkeley. And you, our listeners, are with us. What are your questions? What are your thoughts? Give us a call, 866-733-6786, if you'd like to share your experiences or whether or not these accounts ring true for you as well. Give us a call again, 866-733-6786. Get in touch on Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum, or email us at forum@kqed.org. Joining me now is Michelle Vo, a registered nurse at Kaiser in Fremont. Thanks so much for joining us, Michelle Vo.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So I understand that you assess people suspected of having COVID-19. Is that right?
Yeah, I work in the adult primary care clinic here at Kaiser Fremont. So this is the hub of healthcare. Everybody goes to their primary doctor for everything. And so we get them, you know, when they're healthy, before they get COVID, when they get exposed, and when they have COVID.
And, you know, of course, we're talking this morning about the toll that COVID-19 has been taking among Filipino-American nurses. Does being in the proximity of COVID patients, the work that you do so directly, does it worry you?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's terrifying. And you know, thank you for taking up the subject about Filipino-American nurses. Nursing for, you know, Filipino-Americans is a big part of our identity. And there's, you know, we take great pride in that. The other angle of that is most Filipino nurses are the breadwinners of our families, and we carry the entire family's healthcare. So there's a lot that comes with that, not only responsibility and pride, but, you know, we take on everything, just like, you know, our president Zenny said, it's significant, even though it's terrifying and it affects us every day, mentally, physically, emotionally. We run to the challenge, and then it hit us when we get home. And then, you know, there's also a recognition that obviously the Bay Area and the entire country is saturated with COVID right now. And here where I live, there's a big part of the communities is a Filipinos. They're Filipinos. It's a big Filipino community here. Mm-hmm. And so that impacts us as well, obviously, our families too.
What kind of effects are you seeing in the community in Fremont?
In the Tri-City, right? In the Tri-City, and it's a lot. There's mm-hmm. entire groups of Filipino families, you know, being affected from the youngest, you know, member of the family all the way to the oldest. You know, our patients are calling and you know, they got infected, they got exposed, their cousin came over and dropped off something for 2 minutes and they got exposed. And now the entire family is isolated. Both parents are ill. You know, the loss of income. I mean, you know, we see that economic impact as well here in primary care. Because then, as you all know, Kaiser is a private sector insurance, and they do lose insurance, and they lose jobs. It is everything, and not, you know, not to mention really the psychosocial impacts of having COVID or being exposed to it.
Yes, it sounds like you've been through so much. You know, what you're making me think about, Michelle Vo, is if, yes, as you say, you know, it's a big part of your identity. And if Filipinos are, for example, 4 times more likely to be nurses than any other ethnic group in the yep. U.S., it sounds like, yep. I mean, with all the requirements around COVID, including isolation, that all of those things are particularly acute for you.
Absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
Michelle, I really appreciate you taking the time to share what you're doing, and please stay safe. We need you out there.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Have a great day and be safe.
You too. Michelle Vo, a registered nurse at Kaiser Permanente in Fremont. And let me go to some calls. I'll go to George in Walnut Creek. Hi, George.
Hi, good morning. I'm George, and I've been a registered nurse for over 30 years. And I just want to say how proud I am to call my Filipino nurse colleagues friends. They are the backbone of our healthcare system, and the finest mentors I've had in my 30 years in nursing have been Filipino American nurses. So, with deepest gratitude to all of you, thank you.
George, thanks. Let me see if I can get Michelle from Cupertino in as well. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, this is Michelle.
Hi, go right ahead. You're on.
Thank you. I'd like to support what George just said. I worked in the Department of Veterans Affairs Medical Center in San Francisco as well as in San Diego, which, of course, being federal, attracts even more Filipino heritage nurses because of the links through the military and the Navy bases there. But I wanted to address the issue of why they end up sometimes in the ICUs and more dangerous environments. And it's really a lot of them are really see their nursing career as a vocation. But it's as do many nurses, many with strong family ties to the Philippines. So frankly, they had to look for environments where the pay was the highest, and it always is in the ICU. And I saw many, many of my colleagues work multiple shifts for supporting many family members and their own needs to build wealth being immigrants. Yet at the same time, their dedication to their work made them 100% super colleagues to work with,
well,
and very supportive of patients.
Michelle,
they were great colleagues.
Well, both Michelle and George, thank you for those comments. And so, I mean, basically, Catherine Sunisa Choi, what can we do? How can we address this?
That's an excellent question about what can we do regarding this disproportionate impact, this devastating toll that this pandemic has taken on Filipino-American nurses and their families and communities. And one of the things that we can do is to continue to ask critical questions about why this is happening and to conduct research. And we need disaggregated data. Now that we see this disproportionate toll, we really need more research data, both quantitative and qualitative, that that features Filipino Americans.
Yes.
And we also need to, I think, emphasize what I have been observing in the Filipino American nurse and healthcare and Filipino American community overall, which is the value of communal care and the value for advocacy for Filipino American nurses. And there have been some great examples of that. And I think the leadership of Zany Cortez in NNU is one example of her relentless advocacy for Filipino nurses and by extension, all nurses in the United States. And I would also like to mention, we need to pay attention also to the history of Filipino immigrant nurse activism and advocacy in this country, that even though there are certain kinds of cultural values that may make Filipino immigrant nurses more reticent, we have to remind ourselves that it's the immigration status that may make them also feel more vulnerable. But there's actually this history. Organizations like the PNAA, the Philippine Nurses Association of America, which is a decades-old organization of Filipino-American professional nurses in the United States. And they have a Heal Our Nurses campaign that, with a COVID-19 task force that is seeking solutions, both short-term and long-term, to the issues that Filipino-American nurses are facing. And we need to pay attention to these efforts as well.
Well, Joselito writes, Filipino culture has a more caring and sympathetic attitude. He untweets, the reasons for the disparity include hazardous working conditions, fraudulent recruiting. There's also a cultural lack of response to these conditions from a sense of loyalty that could have been indoctrinated in colonization. Michael tweets, any word on Filipino-American physicians? Zany Cortez, do you know if there is any disparity among physicians as well?
I am not sure about that. I do not have, if there are any, I don't have the numbers mm-hmm. in front of me, but I do know of a friend's brother-in-law in New York who passed away, Filipino doctor who passed away because of COVID.
Do you know,
that, if I
Dr. Sinzatori, yeah. Is your research looking at that?
Well, this goes back to my point about the need for more research and disaggregated quantitative and qualitative data. There was a news report put out by ProPublica that pointed out that this disproportionate toll is happening in the Filipino American community, not solely with Filipino American nurses, but also other healthcare workers. And there is an incredible website called kanlungan.net. Kanlungan is K-A-N-L-U-N-G-A-N, and it means shelter or refuge. And this is a memorial wall for all the Filipino health workers around the world, not solely the United States, including physicians who have fallen as a result of COVID-19. And so that's a great resource for looking at other casualties in the Filipino diaspora.
Could you take a moment to also talk about why it's so hard to get disaggregated data? I feel like this is something particularly the Asian American community has been demanding for a really long time in so many different areas of study. And we're seeing why it's so important even here, because while we see this disparity and disproportionate toll in deaths, it's a lot of, as you say, people coming together to try to compile this data. It's not necessarily something that, you know, institutionally is being done.
Well, I really appreciate, Mina, you bringing that up with such important emphasis. This is something, disaggregated data, that many groups have been asking for, a number of Asian American groups, for example, for some time. And the reason why they're asking for this data, including Filipino Americans, is that since 1965, we've seen this exponential increase of immigration from various Asian countries to the United States. And so while the pan-ethnic or pan-racial umbrella of Asian American continues to remain important, we're also seeing incredible increase of numbers and incredible heterogeneity within Asian American subgroups, such as Filipino Americans. And so we need to respond to the contemporary moment if we're going to address not solely this pandemic, but our future.
And Zeni Cortez, did you want to jump in as well?
Yes. I attribute it to the fact that our employers and our healthcare industry refuses to put out the transparency in all these statistics, simply because in our work area, not just where I work, but it's generic throughout the state of California and even throughout the country, there is lack of contact tracing. There is notification failure of our employers. And all this statistics is important is because how do we know that our mode of infection control and transmission and stop of spread is effective if we do not have the statistics to back up the data that we have controlled the virus in our work areas? And so our employers need to do a better job on contact tracing, notification of exposure, and also the fact that you know, when colleagues or healthcare workers or nurses or doctors die because of COVID-19, they need to put that out there. And that's what's lacking. And I am really disappointed with what's going on. We need to tackle it now so that we know that we are gaining an upper hand in controlling this virus.
And again, Zeni Cortez is a registered nurse at Kaiser Permanente South San Francisco Medical Center and co-president of National Nurses United. Also with us, Catherine Siniza Choi, professor in the Department of Ethnic Studies at UC Berkeley. Her books include Empire of Care, Nursing and Migration in Filipino American History. Let me go to caller Timothy in San Jose. Hi, Timothy.
Yes, Ms. Choi and colleagues there, could you please address the issue regarding looking at the colonial attitude toward Philippine nurses vis-a-vis the Department of Labor lawsuit against the Delano Hospital It was primarily Chinese doctors from China and doctors from India that were discriminatory toward the Philippine nurses. Could you explain that, delineate that, and are they going to have the doctors be first to get the vaccine, not the nurses, like what happened with the Chattanooga nurse that fainted?
Are either of you familiar with what the case that Timothy is discussing here?
I'm not familiar. I don't know.
Yeah. And Dr. Choi, I don't know, or Zenny Cortez, if you have any thoughts more broadly. Yeah.
Yeah. What happened at Delano Medical Center is one example of what I understood to be discrimination against Filipino nurses in the hospital. And historically, we've seen cases like this where there have been things like English-only pressures against Filipino nurses to not speak their Filipino languages in the workplace. And there have also been examples of not solely language, but also other cases of cultural harassment against Filipino nurses and other health workers. I do think this is partly a legacy, an important legacy of, and a sad one, of U.S. colonial history in the Philippines, and the kinds of hierarchies, racial hierarchies, cultural hierarchies, and national origin hierarchies that emerge from that history. And I think compounding this, again, is a kind of xenophobia or fear of the stranger, the immigrant. So all of this is very problematic, and racial attitudes can be, and systematic oppression can be enacted by many different groups against one another. And I hope we learn from this, because we can see how Filipino nurses are dying to save us.
Well, Dr. Chisinita Choi, thank you for the research that you're doing on this. We just have about 30 seconds or so left. And Zenny Cortez, I mean, in the meantime, how are you? I know you don't work directly with COVID patients, but how are you? There are a lot of nurses in your family. How are they?
I think my family, thank goodness, are all doing fine. I do not work in a COVID unit, but I work in the pre-surgery area where I take care of patients before surgery and after surgery. And I'm fortunate that a lot of our patients before they come for surgery are pre-tested for COVID, but in cases of emergency, they're not. So I'm just hoping that I stay safe.
Yes. Well, please do. And thanks so much for coming and sharing your experience with us, and also for the data that National Nurses United compiled so that we can have a better picture of what's going on. Zenny Cortez, registered nurse at Kaiser Permanente South San Francisco Medical Center. Catherine Sinisa Choi, professor in the Department of Ethnic Studies at UC Berkeley. Thanks both of you for joining us. And thanks to our listeners for their questions and comments. We'll be talking about a new short film about grief and loss after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.